You can now take KRBN Internet News Talk Radio with you on your mobile phone, as we are making it easier to listen to the great hosts here on KRBN, including our very own West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. It's free and available on Google Play. Just look for player.fm. That's player.fm and search for KRBN.
Live from Lane County, Oregon, it's the Bo's Nose Show with your host, West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. And now, here's Jay.
And good afternoon, and it's another beautiful day in the Pacific Northwest. Nary a cloud in the sky, that beautiful blue that we get up here in the Pacific Northwest. And I'm coming to you live from beautiful downtown Eugene, Oregon, because I'm here in my office. Again, coming straight out of a housing authority meeting here at Housing and Community Services of Lane County, that as a member of the Board of Commissioners, I'm also on the board of the Housing Authority under HUD rules here, that we do the Section 8 housing and other public housing. Also, as a board on the Board of Commissioners, we also are the Board of Health. So multiple roles as a county commissioner under federal law and state law as a county commissioner. You're not just on the Board of County Commissioners. You also sign up to be part of the Board of Health, and you also sign up to be part of the housing board, and then you also end up on other boards as the commission assignments get passed out. Like, I also sit on the local air pollution authority board and serve on a bunch of committees up in Salem with the Association of Oregon Counties. So it's a fun time. I spend a lot of time in meetings, and had a meeting that just finished up maybe 5 minutes before the start of the Bo's Nose Show here. So kind of running from one thing to the next. And I'm having to operate a little bit differently because for some reason Skype stopped working on my laptop. So I'm coming to you live via my phone, which is one of the ways you can get in on the show today, because it is a free-for-all day where you get to control the topic and your telephone call can steer us in whatever direction you want to go. Just have to call us at 646-721-9887 and just press 1, and that lets Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, know that you want to get in on the conversation, and we'll get you on as quick as we can. In fact, if you call right now, there's no one waiting. We'll get you on right away. Again, that's 646-721-9887. And don't forget to press 1, because that lets us know that you're not just dialing in to listen, because people do also listen on their phone when they can't get to a computer. Like, we've got a couple long-haul truck drivers that listen to our show by telephone, so by their cell phones. So, you know, technology is pretty amazing nowadays. You can also get a hold of us by email at talk@krbnradio.net. And you can do that even between shows. If there's a topic you want me to cover in a future show or a guest you'd like me to have on. But this week we don't have a guest. So it's your chance without a guest to call in and ask me about anything. And I was kind of thinking today we might want to talk a little bit about something the board did 2 weeks ago, because last week's show I had to do a pre-recorded show because I was in a meeting that took place in Portland and this is related to being on the Board of Health, the public health modernization effort that's going on in Oregon right now, as the state tries to make sure that every county that's charged with administrating public health program at the county level is actually doing what they're supposed to be doing, which kind of doesn't really apply to Lane County, because we're really doing everything we're supposed to be doing and then some, because we're a fairly robust county in that department. But there are some smaller counties that really struggle with meeting the mandates of doing public health work, things like communicable disease tracking and reporting and control of outbreaks. that can be a tough thing for a county that's, you know, only got, you know, 10,000 population, and their county government's only, you know, in the tens, not in the 1,400 employee range that Lane County has. So that healthcare modernization program that they're going through is all about trying to make sure that public health is applied equally across the entire state, and that we're doing a good job of providing for public health. You know, one of those things that government can do that really no one else can really do for you. You know, that there's no one else that's going to track measles and mumps and whooping cough, sexually transmitted diseases, or meningitis outbreaks at colleges. That's not going to happen so much in the private sector, as it's got to really be a government-provided service where that gets ported, tracked, and, you know, we're the ones that make decisions around, you know, if we're going to quarantine folks, if we got to try and get out with some preemptive vaccination programs, try and educate people on how to avoid getting contracting whatever disease is running around. So it's a pretty important thing we do. And that's kind of why I had to telephone town hall last week, was that I was occupied on a work group that I was appointed to through the Oregon Health Authority, where I'm participating with a bunch of other public health professionals, and I'm representing basically a larger counties in that work group. But today I thought we might want to talk about what we did 2 weeks ago in the board, because I haven't had a show since then. And we passed something that was a board order relating to foreign citizenship, which doesn't really quite say what we were doing. It kind of says, you know, that we did something relating to foreign citizenship. But what it was really dealing with was a lot of folks' concerns over what is our role as a county when it comes to federal immigration law and dealing with folks that are interacting with the county. You know, what is our role, and trying to define that for county employees, because what we passed was a board order that amended Lane Manual. And there's various levels of government in Lane County. We have our county charter, which is basically our county's constitution. And the only way to change our charter is to go through a public vote of the entire population of Lane County, much like you would amend the constitution. It's much more difficult to do. And the charter really sets about the basics of county government, our organizational structure, and some of our, you know, what our powers are relative to being a home rule county. And then below the charter is our county code. And our county code basically is outward looking and applies to all the citizens of Lane County. So the code gets amended by county ordinance. The Board of Commissioners has control of. It's basically our statutes for the county. And we have to do that through ordinance, which means we have to have a public reading of that ordinance. And then 2 weeks later, we have to have a public hearing and then a second vote to adopt an ordinance. And then it can't take effect for 30 days to give a chance for the people to collect signatures and refer it to the ballot if it's a controversial ordinance. So that code is basically things like, you know, dog licensing or building permits and various other things that apply, noise ordinances that apply to the citizens and not necessarily to our employees. And then we have something called Lane Manual, which is rules really for our employees and kind of how the county is structured. And we can amend Lane Manual by board order. And we don't have to have public hearing to do that. We just have to post notice we're going to do it. It goes up on our website the week before we're actually going to do that. And then we can take an up or down vote that following Tuesday, basically. And that's, you know, really the internal looking document. Basically, those are all the rules for how we're going to execute a lot of what's in Lane code, and sets up some rules for employees. And even beyond that, then there's one more level of government, which is the Administrative Procedures Manual, which is really our county executive, basically, our county administrator. That's his job to keep that Administrative Procedures Manual. And he actually has the power to amend that without consultation with the board. Of course, the board hires and fires the county administrator. So if he's doing things with the Administrative Procedures Manual, we'd probably have something to say about that if it's something we don't like. But that's really about the day-to-day operations of the county and some employee rules, et cetera. Can be something as simple as, you know, how to, you know, what expenses you're allowed to charge and what you're not, you know, as an employee. Details we probably don't get into at the Lane manual level. So what the Board of Commissioners did a couple weeks ago is we passed an ordinance that amends the Lane manual. So it was an ordinance relating to immigration that looks inwardly towards what our employees can do and can or can't do. And it wasn't an ordinance that looks outwardly, that was Lane code or charter amendment that steers the entire organization of Lane County that goes to a public vote. It was basically a piece of legislation that amends our internal rules in the Lane manual. And what we basically did was restate what we're required under state law. And there is some Oregon laws relative to the enforcement of immigration that have been on the books actually for about 30 years. Some statutes that were passed back in the 80s basically say we can't use state and local resources to go out and investigate someone that has not been in trouble with the law, their citizenship status. And we kind of repeated that because that's, you know, what state law says. But at the same time, we were very careful to make sure that law enforcement, once they have somebody in custody in a criminal case, they're allowed to, in fact, they're almost required to communicate to the federal authorities that they have somebody in custody, so the federal authorities have a chance to check immigration status and communicate back and forth with law enforcement. And that's actually in the federal U.S. code, that requirement for law enforcement agencies, local law enforcement agencies, to communicate with the federal government is actually part of U.S. code. So the state law can't actually violate that piece of federal law. And actually that piece of state law about not utilizing local funds and state funds doesn't violate that piece of federal code. And in fact, it's, you know, been tested in court. And in fact, if you go back and read the January 25th executive order from the Trump administration about sanctuary jurisdictions, it specifically references that piece of U.S. code, and I believe that's Section 8 U.S.C. 1337. I'd have to look it up to be exactly accurate on that number, but it's really basically says you have to communicate. Once you've got somebody in custody, you have to communicate with federal government. It doesn't say we have to hold people with the federal government past their release date if the federal government, unless the federal government gives us a warrant from a federal magistrate requesting us to hold somebody. So if we have an order from a judge, a federal judge, saying hold this person, we are required to hold them. But if there's no order from a judge, if we just have an administrative request from the federal government to hold somebody, that that doesn't hold up in court. In fact, there's been court cases where local jurisdictions have held people on a request from immigration folks that wasn't a judge's order, and they've actually been found to have violated that person's rights because it wasn't due process. So it's a really interesting, place we went with this order. We kind of basically reiterated some state law, also made sure we weren't violating federal law. And we did this in a really deliberative process. When people first got upset about this shortly after the Trump administration, after he won the election and they were starting to form the cabinet, people were coming to us back in December wanting us to pass some kind of sanctuary designation for the county. And we knew that that was going to be problematic if we did. And we also knew that there's, laws we have to adhere to, because we are a subdivision of the state, so we have to adhere to state statute. And there's federal laws that if we break, we can get in trouble in federal court and get sued in federal court. So one of the things we want to do is be deliberative about this. And we've done this with a lot of controversial issues. We referred it to a citizens advisory committee. Fortunately, the citizens advisory committee we referred it to was brand new and just being formed at the time this controversy came up. So it took them a little while to kind of get their feet on the ground and start working on it. But they did, and they set up a task group, a subgroup of the citizens advisory committee that included folks that were, that were really wanting to go the sanctuary route, and included people that didn't want to do anything. One of the members of the task group was the current chair of the Lane County Republican Party. It was also on the task group was the sheriff and the DA, our elected law enforcement officials that have to deal with this. Ultimately, that task group came to consensus on a board order and resolution and passed it on to the advisory committee, who voted unanimously in support of it and passed it on to the board for adoption. And that's a process we've used a couple other times. When we got, ages ago, a previous board had banned the use of herbicides in controlling vegetation on a roadside. And we had a bunch of people come to us, a bunch of folks in the ag community, concerned about invasive species that were using our road right-of-ways to get to their farms and causing them economic damage, and wanting us to use herbicides again. Obviously a very controversial issue. And we formed a citizen task group to study that. They came to consensus on a policy, and that involved folks from the ag community and folks from Beyond Toxics, which is against any herbicides basically. And it came up with a policy that basically was, recognizing the fact that you can't control some invasive species with mechanical and other methods, that you have, some of the ways to control them, the only real way to control them is through use of some limited use of chemicals. And they set up a limited policy. The board adopted it. In fact, we just finished putting the last piece in place just this week when we adopted the approved list of herbicides that can be used by our roads department that were recommended to us by another citizens committee, our public health advisory committee, that has medical folks involved in it to actually look at the herbicides relative to human and environmental health to come up with that recommended list. So that's kind of the way Lane County has operated with some of these controversial issues, is we'll actually ask citizens and we'll bring citizens together from differing sides and see if we can come up with something that everybody can agree to. And this Foreign Citizens Board Order we passed that basically reiterates state law and federal law was something that the sheriff supported, the chair of the Lane Republican Party could support, and the folks that are, from Central Latino Americano and other immigration supporters, were able to support. And some of the things folks may not understand that it does and does not do. What it does not do is prevent our law enforcement agencies from communicating with the federal agencies once they have somebody in custody. So if we have somebody that's actually committed a crime, we can then determine whether they're in this country illegally and work with the federal government on those folks. What it does prevent is, you know, our local government employees that are doing work in local government funded by local dollars, state and local dollars, are not supposed to go outside their job description and try and determine somebody's immigration status. They're just supposed to do their job with whoever they're dealing with. And hopefully what that'll do is make folks feel comfortable in dealing with county employees, no matter what their status is. And some folks might get upset about that, but there is some real important things about that. I was talking earlier about how we are the public health agency for the state of Oregon in Lane County. So we're charged with controlling these communicable diseases and dangerous disease outbreaks, foodborne disease outbreaks, and various other things that are public health related. If people are afraid to interact with county employees, do you think we're going to get reports of communicable diseases from folks that have, you know, uncertain immigration status or illegal immigration status? And who do you think is most likely to bring into our community a communicable disease that's not currently present? So if these people, this population, is out there and unwilling to talk to county employees that are not law enforcement because they're fear for the fact that, you know, they'll get reported and deported, we may not catch a communicable disease outbreak until it gets too far. And believe me, there's some, you know, particularly in Lane County, where we have a very low level of immunization, for lots of reasons. There's folks that don't believe in immunizations in this county. We're susceptible to some very serious communicable disease outbreaks, and some of them are very, very serious, and people have no idea what it would be like if we had a serious disease outbreak. This is about protecting public health and having those people not be afraid to report or go to a medical professional in a county clinic to see them about something that's going on, and ultimately, you know, control these things before, in the early stages, and catch that. There are other issues, victims of crime not being willing to report, you know, because one of the things law enforcement agencies, yes, once they arrest somebody that's a criminal, they're allowed to look into their immigration status. But we want folks to be able to feel comfortable coming to law enforcement or some of our county agencies that deal with domestic violence, child abuse, elder abuse, and report those things, because that's really important that we deal with that abuse situation and, you know, help folks from those situations, no matter what their immigration status is. And sometimes the report they would be giving on that is not about themselves, but about somebody that has legal citizenship status. You know, think about who some of the jobs that are typically occupied by folks with that are illegal immigrants. They're quite often your housekeeper or your doing maid service and all that. How often might they be the person that sees abuse of a child or sees an elder being abused in a household that they're providing that housekeeping service for? And that person being abused could very well be a citizen of the U.S., and the person doing the abusing could be a citizen of the U.S., but without that person feeling comfortable to report that, we're not going to be able to stop that. So really, there's a whole public safety aspect about people being too afraid to be in contact with local government. So you know, that's one of the reasons I felt it was important to reiterate some of those things that we will and won't do as a county when it relates to folks with, you know, their immigration status, because it isn't, there are things we do as a county that it's important that even if you're illegal, we want you to talk to us and interact with us, and not feel that if you do, we're going to turn you in. And you know, that's really what that motion was all about, was kind of just reiterating state law, reiterating where we stand, you know, that assurances that we're going to comply with federal law. And one of the things it also did was it assures our employees that even as individual citizens in their non-employee time, they still have their First Amendment rights, that they can go and if they have suspected somebody of being in country illegally and they choose on their own time to report that person to immigration, that's not something we can control. They still have a right to, they still have a right to do that. So even, you know, there is that ability. It's just that we don't want them, while they're being paid with local funds, to actually be actively looking up somebody's immigration status. That's not what they're currently being paid to do. It's really a federal obligation. And what's interesting is even our law enforcement folks, they're not sworn to enforce federal law. They're sworn to enforce state and local law. If you, you know, and that's what they're legally allowed to do. You know, the FBI enforces federal law. You know, if you get in trouble for, you know, internet child porn, the agency that arrests you is the Federal Bureau of Investigation, not Lane County Sheriff's Department, because that's a federal law. So it's kind of also about, you know, clearly defining the separation of powers and not having us do something for the federal government where they're not supplying us the funding to do it, you know, and forcing an unfunded mandate down on us. Similar to when the state passed the expanded gun background checks bill and they wanted local law enforcement to enforce that, they didn't pass any money with it. And Lane County at that time took a stance that we weren't going to do any additional enforcement relative to those expanded background checks unless the state provided us funding. And yeah, so it's, you gotta be consistent about unfunded mandates also. So if you wanna have talk about, you know, immigration, or if you wanna talk about public health, or if you want to talk about herbicides and roadside management, or we want to talk about whatever you want to talk about, give us a call here at the Bo's Nose Show at 646-721-9887 and just press 1. That lets Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, know that you want to get in on the conversation. Again, that number is 646-721-9887 and press 1 so we can get you in on the show. Really, it's your show today. This is a free-for-all show, so I'll answer, you know, whatever questions you have. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. You know, if you want to ask me about my standard poodles, we can talk poodles. If you want to talk to me about the bill that the legislature passed that's going to require insurers in this state full cost of abortions, we can talk about that. If you want to talk about you know, the latest Russian rumors with Donald Trump, we can talk about that. You know, so, or we can even talk about how the Clinton campaign, you know, worked with the Ukrainian government to try and dig up dirt on Donald Trump. You know, we can talk about any foreign collusion conspiracy theories that you wish to talk about. That's why it's a free-for-all day. It's your show, so give us a call again, 646-721-987. Just press 1 if you want to get in on the show. If not, I'll just keep rambling on about various other items that have been coming to and from the board recently. I got a chance, you know, in that whole monologue about our foreign citizenship board order to mention our roadside vegetation management program. And I have to say, I'm kind of proud about that, because it was something that when I came in as a commissioner was something that everyone said we couldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. If you get involved with it, you know, it's the tar baby of issues in Lane County. There's too much, you know, heavy feelings on both sides about the use of herbicides. But we managed through a really great process, and I have to give my hats off to Orrin Schumacher, who's our current road maintenance manager, who actually ran that task force and got them to come to consensus and agreement on a policy with very diverse opinions. We had somebody on that board from Beyond Toxics. We had somebody from two people from the Farm Bureau. We had somebody from the Alternatives to Pesticides nonprofit here locally, so another anti-pesticide group. So, you know, it was, we had medical professionals on that group. We had environmental scientists that were from the U of O. So really wide, varied group. And they got to a point where they could, you know, understand the issues the farmers and the foresters were having with invasive species, and even what invasive species are doing to push out native populations that folks that are on the environmental side are trying to protect. And, you know, getting to understand that even the watershed councils use herbicides in some of their invasive species control to protect native populations in some of their watershed enhancement projects kind of got folks to really understand that it's a tool, but like any tool, it can be used wrong. But if you use it correctly and use it in a limited way, herbicides can be utilized to control some of these noxious invasive species that really are causing problems. And ag is a big business in Oregon. It's a big business in Lane County, and everybody wants us to grow our food locally. And if we are having all these exotic and, you know, Japanese knotweed and various species and that you can't control by mowing, you know, these a lot of these species will actually seed at mower height if you mow them. And the next time you go along, you're actually spreading them with the mower. It's just one of those things where it sometimes you just have to resort to controlling some of these populations with chemicals. Limited chemicals, and try and do it at the right time of year so you don't end up getting a lot of runoff into the waterways. It's all about using them correctly. And we went from, you know, where there were, you know, several hundred people signed petitions back in 2012 wanting us to bring herbicides back into our portfolio. It was mostly farmers and ranchers and foresters that signed those petitions, to where we formed that task force, and we're finally now going to have pilot programs this year starting to utilize some herbicides out there to control specific populations of invasive species. And, you know, it's something that hopefully will lead to, you know, better roadside management and a healthy ag and forest community here in Lane County, where we can grow our own food locally and reap the benefits of a really growing food industry here. You know, when we think about, you know, everything from, you know, Yogi Teas to Ninkasi Brewing to Cosmo Corn to, you know, all sorts of local food, Turtle Mountain and you know, we've got a growing food sector and food economy going in Lane County. It depends on our local agriculture, as you know, to feed into that. We need to protect our agriculture from some of these invasive species. And that was something we just adopted yesterday, was that list of herbicides. And, you know, it's something that, you know, I'm kind of proud of the way we handled that as a county. And that we look to our citizens and an advisory committee to help steer us in our policy we ultimately adopted as a board. We did that with our large events task force and how we use our parks, which parks should be holding large events, what kind of events should we hold at our parks, what are some of the criteria to holding a large event. And we went through that task force and came up with some recommendations the board's adopted. And, since then we haven't had the issue like we had out at Mount Pisgah when we had an event out there caused such complaints in the community. Now we have an understanding with the community as to what events are appropriate events for our parks and which parks are appropriate for holding large events. So hopefully we won't see those conflicts between what we do with our parks and the neighbors of our parks in the future, and conflicts between events we hold at the park and the values that regular park users have that use those parks. Some of the peace and quiet that goes with that, or the environmental aspects of some of our parks. So, that's something we just, a value that we've adopted here in Lane County is how important it is to listen to citizens and get citizen input. We saw it when we were looking at trying to save money in our solid waste system, where we got a consultant to look at it. They came in with some recommendations. We went out and held public meetings about those recommendations and actually highly changed what the consultant recommended. And instead of closing down a bunch of rural transfer stations, we left them open, but raised the fees because that's what the citizens told us they wanted. It was more important for them to have the convenience of those transfer stations that they were willing to pay a little bit extra cost for than to close them down to save the money and have to drive long distances to get rid of their solid waste. And that was all based on citizen input that we made that change. So it's important that we hear from you all. And that's one of the reasons I do this radio show here on KRBN Internet Radio, is so that you can interact with me and tell me some of your concerns and some of the things you'd like to see the county do. And you can do that by calling us at 646-721-9887 and just press 1, and that, gets you in on the conversation, and we'll get you on the line and talk about what you want to talk about instead of what Jay wants to ramble on about. So, again, that's 646-721-9887. And that gets you into the Bo's Nose Show here. We're coming to you live from downtown Eugene on KRBN Internet Radio. And you can also email us at talk@krbnradio.net. And you can even get to us on Facebook. You can get to, if you put in KRBN Internet Radio on Facebook, you'll find our page. Or you can get to me directly on my Facebook pages. Jay Bozovich, West Lane County Commissioner, is my county commissioner page, or just Jay Bozovich. I'm one of a few Bozoviches on Facebook, Bozievich. You can find me pretty well on Facebook. If you want to see my poodle pictures and see more of my personal side, you can friend me personally. If you just want to see the county stuff, like my county commissioner's Facebook page, and that's where I post various items about the county and place where I'll put updates out. Last year when there was the fire out there off of High Pass Road, the High Pass Road fire, I was posting alerts on that fire there. If there's, during the ice storm last winter, I was posting information from the various electric utilities about outages and estimated restoration times on my Facebook page. So as I get information that county commissioners get that maybe the general public doesn't get, I'll put it out on that county commissioner page. I'll also put links to various board actions and events that are coming up there. And it's also a place where you can message me directly and ask me about county stuff. So lots of ways to get a hold of me. besides calling into this radio show at 646-721-9887 and just simply press 1. And that offers you the opportunity to control the topic here on the Bo's Nose Show. So as we kind of run through some of the topics that we had, I kind of was half expecting somebody to call about immigration, because it certainly seemed to generate a lot of conversation on Facebook. And I wonder, if maybe that's just purely how Facebook works and the internet, where people can kind of make a quick comment and go away, so to speak. Most, at least on Facebook, they're not quite so anonymous when they comment. But here on the Bo's Nose Show, we'll just give your first name, so we're not going to identify you too much if you want to call in and talk about immigration. Want to have a conversation though, and understand what your concerns might be, if you thought we did the right thing by adopting that board order, did we do the wrong thing? Did we not go far enough? Give us a call here at the Bo's Nose Show, 646-721-9887, and press 1. But if we don't want to talk about that too much, we can get into some other stuff here. Talk about
a couple of things I could throw in there, Jay, is there's a couple of things going on in Oregon, and one of them being the tax on bicycles over $200. What's your thoughts on that?
To me was the transportation package had something in it that everybody could hate. Which is the kind of the sign of a compromise package. And the cycling community and the pro bike ped folks really didn't like the bicycle tax, but it was one of those things that was put in there to kind of say to the folks that were paying all the gas taxes to build bike paths and sidewalks, we're going to make them carry some of the weight here. And it was part of how they got the yes on increasing gas taxes, was to have some deriving of funding for bicycle facilities that came directly from the bicycling community. Yes, I know, because I'm a cyclist, I pay gas taxes, I register my car and all that stuff, but there needs that direct tie. Is always nice to have, those taxes that are collected on those bikes are going directly into a funding source that purely does cycling and pedestrian facilities. It's not going to be spent on the between the curbs roadway, if you know what I mean. So I kind of supported that because I thought it was part of the package. I know that some people don't like it, and it does kind of smack of a sales tax, which in Oregon is antithesis to a lot of things. Although I'll probably make a lot of people mad here when I state that I actually like sales taxes better than almost any kind of tax that you can have, because people can control how much tax they pay by how much they consume to a certain degree, and it's a visible tax. Where people know what they're paying in tax.
Well, on that same note, like a federal sales tax, Jesse Ventura commented one time that he'd rather see a repeal of the federal tax and have a federal sales tax. And his reasoning is that under the current tax system, the government gets your money before you do. Under a sales tax system, the government is more directly involved in the health of the economy.
Yeah. Well, the other part of that is the income tax tends to become something that everybody tinkers with and generates a lot of money for K Street, changing a little law here or a little law there, a deduction change here, depreciation schedule change there, and it makes millions for some big corporation who's willing to pay, a couple million into a K Street firm to try and get some little sentence changed in a bill, as a right totally unrelated. It's too easy to have folks mess with things that way. It's really one of those things that you really just, income tax leads to that. And income tax really, if you want to tax something or suppress something, you tax it. So if you want to suppress people wanting to earn money, you're taxing it in income tax. A sales tax, which is a consumption tax, a visible consumption tax. One thing I don't like is this whole idea of this business sales tax they're trying to pass, because you wouldn't see it as a consumer. It would just be buried in the price of a product, which is what corporate taxes are too. They're buried in the prices of your products. I like taxes people know they're paying. And at least personal income taxes, people know you're paying it when you file every year. But one of the things about withholding, which is what I would try and get rid of, I'd get rid of withholding, if anything, and make people have to write a check once a month, maybe, for their income tax withholding, where they actually physically have to write the check, because, that would wake people up if they had to write a check every month for their federal withholding. But sales tax, people, see it at the end of the receipt. And makes it so that you can't, not know that you're paying that tax. So, that's kind of where, I know people in Oregon don't like the sales tax, and I agree with them in one sense. If we're going to have a sales tax, let's go the whole way and eliminate the state income tax and replace it with a sales tax. And folks that think it's regressive, there's a way to get around that. You can do what they call a rebate program. Some people call it a prebate, where you send every household in Oregon a check maybe once a quarter that is supposed to equal the what sales tax you'd pay on a low-income household, whatever the basic, income would be, whatever the federal poverty level is. You figure out how much you spend on your necessities, and the sales tax would be on that, and you give a rebate check, every quarter, or even do it as a prebate check at the beginning of the quarter to make up for that, what you would spend at the poverty level on sales tax. And then whatever you spend above that, as you earn more and more, then there's no real discouragement for people to try and work their way out of poverty either. The way the current earned income tax credit is, you start earning too much money, you lose your earned, that your free money coming back to you kind of discourages you from working your way out of poverty. So there's a lot of good things about a sales tax. So the bike tax doesn't bother me too much. Getting back to that whole transportation package, probably the one thing that bothered me the most in it was the income tax on businesses for mass transit that was included in the package. But again, that's the piece I hate in the package that kind of makes it a compromise.
Well, in a sense, we're already paying like the LTD tax and other taxes. And that's also part of the reason why, as a lifelong Oregonian, nine times they asked for a sales tax and nine times we said no. And number one reason, to be honest, is I don't trust Salem.
Yeah. Yeah. If they're ever going to get a yes on a sales tax, it's got to be as a constitutional amendment that prohibits an income tax, where they have to make a switch over within, in 2 years, there will not be an income tax. And it will be illegal to have one without a constitutional amendment. Yeah. And that's the way that you could get to a sales tax in Oregon. And if we ever did eliminate the state income taxes, including corporate income taxes, we would have a boom. We'd have a state that would boom like you wouldn't believe. One of the reasons why Washington State has a tendency to have a lot, you know, more of a growing economy than Oregon. So is that difference between their taxation system? And as you look across the country, states that don't have income taxes, states that do.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, that Oregon is not a cheap place to live. And it seems like every time we turn around, they're always screaming for more money. We never have enough money. We never have enough money for schools, you know. And then on the other side of the coin, we see them spending money frivolously on non-essential stuff. And then again, still saying, well, we need to raise taxes because we just don't have enough money to do whatever else we want to do.
Yeah.
And there's just a point where, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that's, you know, we've discussed my frustration with the state government and how they don't control their expenses and they're always trying to raise revenue. And it just seems like there's this, the way state government set up is so different from county government, where I actually get to kind of control expenses, but also pass the budget. The legislature passes a budget, but they're not in charge of negotiating contracts with unions and controlling expenses day to day. The governor's office is. So if the governor doesn't control expenses, the legislature is stuck paying for it as those expenses roll up from biennium to biennium. The system built to fail.
Well, exactly. And what's the... What's the answer?
I think some of the answer is there's got to be some legislative oversight of collective bargaining in this state, where collective bargaining that's done for state employees has to get approved by the contracts have to go through the legislature or somehow or another, or have some kind of oversight. Because the governor can be just giving the house away in a 3-year contract to SEIU, working in our, Department of Human Services, and the legislature just has to deal with it. Yeah. With whatever that expense is when the next biennium rolls around. Assuming the legislature would want to control it, but at least it seems like whoever is controlling the budget purse strings ought to have some ability to control the expense. And I know there's an issue about separation of legislative versus executive powers, but it's just kind of one of these disconnects, at least at the county level, at the Board of Commissioners. I adopt our budget, which projects what our revenues are going to be and what our expenses are going to be. And I also negotiate and approve contracts with unions. So I'm going to have to deal with trying to meet that budget. If I approve a union contract that's too fat, there's give and take in the contracting that's controlled by the state. Oregon's public bargaining act, which is just public employee bargaining act, which is incredible, tilted towards the public unions more than it is towards management as it is. So there's already a lot of law around collective bargaining. This would just be, maybe kind of taking some of and putting it back, at least trying to tie whoever's got to pay for it to who approves the contract.
Well, is the mindset still that in order that when we come up to the fiscal year that we got to spend all the money in our budget so we can increase our budget next year?
Yeah, I think there's still some of that in government agencies. And that's part of, where you get into having good auditing. And I'm kind of glad to see Dennis Richardson now in the Secretary of State's office, because I think you're going to see some of that good auditing. And we saw some of that in the as they looked at the Oregon Health Plan, where discovered there was a huge percentage of folks that were being allowed to be on the Oregon health plan that don't qualify, that they hadn't been vetted by the Oregon Health Authority correctly. And in an audit, it determined, I think it was 17% or something, that income's higher than the limits to qualify for getting free, you know, insurance and health care from the state. And it was worth, you know, billions of dollars. So hopefully Secretary of State Richardson will keep up the good work and kind of hold some of those agencies' feet to the fire and kind of embarrass them publicly maybe about, you know, one of the things he could do is look at some of the end of biennium spending of some of these agencies and see if they're suddenly doing a bunch of trainings of employees and trips and equipment purchases and whatever else, trying to suck up the last of their budget rather than letting it roll over into their reserves. You know, that's really part of what that audits division with the Secretary of State does. And, you know, we talked about that a lot when I had Sid Lykin on when he was running for Secretary of State about what some of those functions are. And good to see somebody in there that I think is really going to hold some of those state agencies' feet to the fire with that audit division. Should be interesting. Unlike Brad Avakian, who was threatening to use the audit division against corporations outside of the state agencies, which is not within their power, but he was telling people that was one of the things he was going to do, was to audit corporations. So hopefully we'll get some common sense.
When you're talking about just going back to what you're saying, you make too much for a program. One of my pet peeves on that is that they always go by the gross amount, and you know, gross amount versus actually what you get. Because, you know, when you're in the 30-35% tax bracket, yeah, you could be making $20 or $15-$20 an hour, but what are you actually getting to take home after all that?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, which is one of the things that, you know, if we went to a pure sales tax, people would know that whatever they're being offered as a salary is what they're actually going to get to take home. Well, we're getting pretty close to the end of the hour here on the Bo's Nose Show. And I hope folks know that, you know, we're here every Wednesday at 4. Occasionally, I have to do a pre-recorded program or a repeat because I have a conflicting meeting obligation as a county commissioner, which is my first duty. But my, you know, one of my duties is to try and keep in contact with my constituents, and that's why we do the Bo's Nose Show. So I hope folks will come back, you know, maybe next week at 4 o'clock or the week after, and, you know, give us a call, and we'll talk about what you want to talk about here on the Bo's Nose Show. Talked about it, covered a lot of ground here today, everything from sales taxes to immigration and sanctuary to herbicides and roadside spraying, you name it. We covered it here on the Bo's Nose Show today, but I'd love to cover what you want to cover. So hopefully we'll get to that in some other future week. You'll get a hold of us here at the Bo's Nose Show at 646-721-9887. Or email us at talk@krbnradio.net, or just find us on Facebook, and I'd love to talk to you. Thank you for listening to the Bo's Nose Show. We'll be back next week at the same time. I don't know if we'll have a guest or not. I haven't had a chance to look to see if there's somebody I want to bring on the show. Email me if there's somebody you want to bring on the show. Thank you for listening to the Bo's Nose Show. Hopefully, we'll get to hear from you in some future week. Have a great evening and good night from beautiful downtown Eugene, Oregon.